We have the questions on lesson 13 to answer before we get into chapter 14 tonight, so let's just get with that and get on into our study of the next chapter. Number one, why do we pay taxes to our government? What reason did the Apostle Paul give us for doing that anyway? Anyone?
So they can meet their responsibilities.
All right. The civil government has responsibilities, God-given responsibilities, that require money. And the way that governments raise money is by charging taxes of the citizens. And Paul gives an additional reason that fits in with those reasons for...
Conscience.
Pardon me?
Conscience.
No. That they are servants of God in doing that work. That's in verse 6. Government is God's minister to serve its citizens in that respect. Policemen have to be paid, armies have to be paid, and all of that kind of thing requires money. And of course, our government today does a whole lot more things than that, but all of it require money, and for those reasons we pay taxes. Why are we to be subject to the laws of government? Because what?
They were ordained by God.
All right, because government is appointed or ordained by God. That is, they are serving a God-given function, and Paul refers to them in this chapter as being the servant or the minister of God whenever they're performing those functions. That's in verse 1. From where does the authority of civil government come? Answer to that ought to be pretty obvious. Alright. God is the source of all authority. It doesn't matter what level of government or of society there is. If someone has authority, he possesses it because God has granted it to him. He has been delegated to that authority by God. That's in verses 1 and 2. Where do we read of the first statement of God regarding capital punishment?
Genesis 9, verse 9.
All right. In Genesis 9, verses 5 and 6 is the first place where it is specifically mentioned as being the punishment for the taking of human life. There may be an earlier instance of it. Anybody have an idea what that might be? All right. The story of Cain and Abel. Whenever Cain killed his brother Abel, he came and complained that someone might kill him for what he had done, and God pronounced a sentence upon anyone that would harm Cain for doing that, and that sentence was what? It's 7. It didn't really specify death or capital punishment, but it said his punishment shall be sevenfold, and I don't know what that would be other than to take his life. Those who do good, are obedient to the laws of civil government, should expect what from their government? All right, they should expect praise and protection from their government, rather than to be treated evilly. That's in verses 3 and 4. Number 6, what debt do all Christians have?
To love their brother.
All right, to love our brethren. Pardon me?
Owe no man anything.
All right. We're not to owe anyone anything except to love our brethren. Number 7, which one of the Ten Commandments that have to do with our social relations is omitted by Paul in this chapter?
Honor father and mother.
Pardon me?
Honor father and
mother. All right. It's the 5th one. To honor your mother and your father. That's in Exodus 20, verse 12. Number 8, for what should the Christian make no provision? For the lust of the flesh. Don't make any provisions to satisfy the lust of the flesh. That's in verse 14. Number 9, what should we do because the night is far spent and the day is at hand? Pardon me? Be prepared, right?
cast out the works
of darkness. Or cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. That's in verse 13. Number 10, of what is love the fulfillment?
The law.
It's the fulfillment of the law. In fact, Paul says essentially the same thing that Jesus did, I believe, over in Matthew 10, where he was talking about the two greatest commandments, and he said, on these two, the whole law hangeth. And Paul says, love is the basics of one of those, or of those commandments. All right, that brings us to chapter 14, unless there's some questions on the questions on chapter 13. Let's look at chapter 14. You'll note that Paul has left the subject of justification by faith or by works. He's now in what we might call the practical advice or teaching of the book of Romans, chapter 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. Hardly have any reference at all to the theme of the book of Romans, which is justification by faith. Instead, they're all devoted to a study of some practical matters that Paul and the Holy Spirit evidently felt like the Roman Christians needed. This 14th chapter has to do with differences that come up between brethren. Differences that are the result of lack of knowledge, and what Paul identifies in this chapter as lack of faith on the part of some, that keeps them from being able to understand and to appreciate that the things that they object to or the things that they're unwilling to do are not forbidden by the Word of God, but are allowed. And their misunderstanding causes them to think that here is something that I should not do, and they would have a guilty conscience if they were to do that. There are two different examples given in this 14th chapter about those differences. One has to do with the eating of meats. And you really don't know whether it's the Jewish objection to the eating of meats based upon their not having the proper understanding with regard to the Old Testament law having been done away with, forbidding them to eat pork and things of that sort, that would keep them from eating some meats. And the Gentiles, on the other hand, wondering why don't these Jewish Christians understand that we can eat pork. And so that might have been the cause of differences. On the other hand, it might have been the Gentiles who were refusing to eat certain meats. When you look at 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter and the 10th chapter of 1 Corinthians, you see that there was a problem with regard to the eating of meats that were sold in the shambles or in the sort of delicatessen places where meat that had been offered as a sacrifice to idols was sold, not necessarily with the idea of worshiping the idols, but simply being sold as meat that was already prepared. People could go there and buy it, and if they wanted to use it for the worship of the idols to which it had been offered, they could do that. But on the other hand, people could go that had no concept at all of worshiping the idol and just went and bought that meat and took it home to make sandwiches out of it without any thought of worshiping the idols. Gentiles who had become Christians found it difficult to disassociate in their minds the idea of going there to those places and buying that meat that had been offered as a sacrifice to idols and the worship of the idols itself. And so they decided, we better not eat that meat at all. We'll just refrain from doing that. But the Jewish Christians, not being inclined to be idolatrous at all, would have no trouble at all with going to those places and buying that meat and taking it home to eat it just for a meal. And so, whether it was Gentiles not eating the meat for the reason that I've given, or Jews not eating certain kind of meats for the reason that I've given, we don't know, but it was one or the other. And you had a situation in the church where some of the Christians believed it was right to eat meats, and others believed that it wasn't right to eat meats. And the problem was that those who thought it was wrong to eat meats were condemning and judging the people in the congregation who believed it was all right to eat meat. You're doing something that's wrong. And thus it was creating a problem between brethren over that. The second issue, over which evidently there were divisions that arose, had to do with the observance of certain days. And again, it might be the same Jewish-Gentile conflict, that the Jews may have wanted to continue keeping the Passover, for instance, or Pentecost, or the Sabbath day even. Maybe they didn't feel like, not understanding that the Old Testament law had fully been done away with, that they were allowed to work on the Sabbath day. And so they refrained from working on the Sabbath day, observing that day or some other days. And the Gentiles, not ever having been under the law, couldn't understand why the Jews don't work on Saturday. The Jewish Christians, why they don't work on Saturday. Or why do they observe Passover? The Gentiles knew nothing at all about the Passover. And so that was a difference. Or again, it could have been that Gentiles had brought some holidays or special days that they observed before they became Christians, and they were keeping those days, not necessarily to worship pagan idols or anything like that, but just days that they observed. And Jews wondered, why do they keep those days? So whether one or the other, either with regard to the eating of meats or the observance of days, there were significant differences that arose between brethren in the churches in Rome that caused some brethren to set aside or to condemn or to judge or not want to have anything to do with brethren who disagreed with them on such matters. The significant thing to note about this chapter is that it is dealing with differences that don't matter so far as the law of the Lord is concerned. The gospel of Christ makes no prohibitions at all with regarding to the eating of one kind of meat as opposed to the other. The only prohibition you might run into with regard to that is eating something that is strangled or that has the blood in it. But otherwise, meat properly prepared, the law allows that. Christians are not prohibited from doing it. And so a Christian that is eating those meats, he's not breaking the law. But a Christian that refuses to eat those meats, refrains from doing that, is he breaking any law? No. So he's not doing wrong, and he's not doing wrong, and so what's the difference? Well, of course, the difference is that the one who believes it's wrong thinks that the person who is eating it is wrong also. But that arises out of his misunderstanding or his lack of knowledge. There are a couple of things we need to be sure we understand here. One is that whenever the word judging is used here, it's always used in the sense of condemning. When you are judging your brother, it wasn't just that they were trying to determine whether the brother was right or wrong, weighing the evidence on either side as we normally think of judging, but rather the word judging is used in the sense of condemning. Why do you condemn your brother for doing something that the scriptures allow him to do? And then, I forgot the other one already, a faith is the second one. The word faith is used in two different ways in the scriptures. We might refer to one as the objective faith and the other as a subjective faith. The objective faith is what Jude refers to in Jude 3, that the faith has once for all been delivered to the saints. Objective faith is the gospel of Jesus Christ that has been revealed by the apostles and the prophets. Subjective faith is what faith a person has. Now, obviously, a person's subjective faith ought to be exactly the same as the faith, the objective faith. But why wouldn't it be? Because the person doesn't have enough knowledge. He doesn't have enough understanding. And he doesn't know enough, perhaps for whatever reasons lying in his background, he doesn't understand the scriptures well enough to know that there are no prohibitions against the eating of meat. There are no prohibitions against the observance of days. And so they would object to those things, even though they were not wrong from the standpoint of what the scriptures teach. So these things are matters that might be described as being indifferent, whether you do them or not, or they are matters of liberty. You can eat meat if you want to, but if you choose not to eat meat, you're not going to do any wrong that way either. And so that's the kind of things that we're dealing with in this chapter. We are not dealing with matters of faith, whether or not we are to worship the one true and the living God, or whether or not baptism is essential to salvation. Those kinds of things are matters of faith, and we cannot allow a person to misunderstand and to act inappropriately on the basis of his understanding with regard to such matters of faith as that. These are different. This is dealing with matters of liberty or matters of indifference. The hardest part of the problem, as I can see it from looking at Romans 14, is in the fact that even though a matter may be allowed by the scriptures, a person, because he has an improper understanding of the scriptures or a lack of knowledge or is ignorant of certain things, he believes it is wrong. How can he, believing it is wrong, look to his brother who is doing what he believes to be wrong and not condemn him or not to judge him? That's the hard part of trying to apply this passage of Scripture. We don't have the same kind of problems today that create differences between us as there were back in the first century between these Christians in Rome. We don't have problems of whether or not we can eat meat. We may have some problems with regard to observance of certain days. I've known of Christians who believe it is absolutely wrong to exchange Christmas gifts or to have a Christmas dinner on December the 25th because they think that's celebrating it as if it were the birthday of Christ. And so they believe it's wrong, and they may believe that if you and I do that, that we're wrong for doing that. But from the standpoint of the scriptures, it's a matter of liberty or a matter of indifference if we simply observe it from a traditional standpoint and not as the birthday of Christ. So we might have some problems that cause differences like that, but again, we have to be careful not to judge or condemn one another over such matters of liberty. Any questions or comments before we get into the lesson?
So what you're saying is we just have to respect the conscience of the one who eats meat or doesn't eat meat. We just have to respect that, right?
That's right. In fact, what Paul says is we're not the judge of a person on the basis of our opinions. The only right of judgment that we are ever given is to judge on matters of faith or doctrine. Judge righteous judgment, Jesus said. But on such matters of indifference or of liberty, then we are not to make a judgment so as to condemn someone. Each person stands or falls on the basis of his master. Anyone else? Yes,
Kim?
Yes. That's right. That's the last verse of the chapter says that. If you cannot be fully assured that something is right for you to do it, even though it may be right to do it, if you cannot be assured in your own heart that it's right for you to do it, then it becomes a sin for you to do it because it is a violation of your conscience. Not a violation of the scriptures. just a violation of your conscience. All right. Verse 1, receive one who is weak in the faith, but not for disputes over doubtful things. And that's the general principle that the whole chapter is about. You, brethren, need to learn to receive, to respect, to appreciate, to love one another, and to regard each other as brethren, even though these kinds of differences exist among you. But do not receive a brother for the purpose of arguing with him. That's the whole point that he's saying here. But not to dispute over doubtful things, over these things that don't matter. Don't receive him just for the point of arguing with him or trying to put him down or to make him feel badly about it. That's not to say that when differences come up, the brethren cannot discuss their differences. In fact, we ought to do that from the standpoint of what the Scriptures teach. And if a person is mistaken in his beliefs and practices because he doesn't understand the Scriptures correctly, it certainly would be beneficial on our part to try to help him come to a better understanding of the Scriptures so that he doesn't have that hang up and it doesn't create a problem between us. But it needs to be done in a proper way rather than to condemn and judge and put down and make a person feel badly. Trying to expose his ignorance is the wrong way to go about that. So we need to receive one another, but not for the point of just having an argument. For one believes that he may eat all things, but he who is weak in faith, that is weak in his own faith, not weak in the believing the gospel, he does believe the gospel, but he is weak in his own faith based upon his lack of knowledge. He only eats vegetables. You might just say at that point, so what? Doesn't make any difference. If he doesn't eat vegetables, if he doesn't eat meat, wants to be a vegetarian, that's fine. Why try to insist and argue with him and put him down and condemn him because he doesn't eat a T-bone steak once in a while? Let not him who eats, here's the guy who thinks it's right to eat meat, let him who eats despise, let not him who eats despise him who does not eat. And let not him who does not eat judge him who eats. For God has received him. Both of you are brothers in Christ. Both of you are in fellowship with God. You ought to be in fellowship with one another. So do not condemn one another. And that's where the word judge there is used in the sense of condemning. Do not condemn one another over these things that don't matter. It doesn't matter whether the brother eats meat or not. He stands or falls in the sight of his master, the Lord. And your opinion about the matter is not a valid reason for condemning him. Who are you to judge another servant? Well, all of us work for the same master. That's Jesus Christ. He is our master, and each one of us is going to be judged by him. And why we have a right to judge one another on the basis of the teaching of Christ, the things that matter, doctrine and faith, we do not have the right to insert our own opinion and use our opinion as the basis for judging or condemning someone who is a servant of Jesus Christ. There is only one person who has the right and only one standard by which that person can be judged. And that's Christ is the only judge, and his law or his revelation is the only standard by which a person can be judged. He will be made to stand, that is, by Christ. If I judge on the basis of my opinion to find somebody wrong, is he going to fall in the sight of Christ? No, he's still going to stand. I can get up and condemn him to hell if I want to, but that's not going to make him go to hell. Christ is the one who does that, and he will not do it on the basis of my opinion. One person esteems one day, and here's the second issue that caused the differences between the brethren. One person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each man be fully convinced in his own mind. What were these days that they were observing? I don't know. Whether they were Jews observing certain days according to the law, or whether they were Gentiles observing certain days out of their tradition or culture. Whether they were one or the other, we're not told. But one person esteems one day, and another person esteems another day. What difference does it make? Every other and another esteems every day alike. Here's a guy who doesn't have any special preferences for any day. Every day to him is just like any other day. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind as to why we are observing a day, as to be sure that it is right before we observe it. He who observes the day observes it to the Lord. That is, he does it with a full understanding that he believes that the Lord is pleased with him when he does that. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it. And he who does not observe the day to the Lord, he does not observe it. He doesn't observe it because he doesn't believe the Lord wants him to observe it. And so he doesn't. What difference does it make whether you do observe it or don't observe it? It doesn't matter because the Lord hasn't said anything about it. And so the guy who observes the day ought not to judge the guy who doesn't observe it. Because it doesn't matter one way or the other. To the Lord he does not observe it. He who eats, eats to the Lord, for he gives God thanks. And he who does not eat, doesn't mean he doesn't eat at all, but he who eats meat, eats it with glory given to the Lord. But he who does not eat meat to the Lord, because he believes the Lord doesn't want him to do it, he does not eat. And he gives God the thanks nevertheless. For none of us lives to himself. You'll frequently hear this verse quoted as if it had reference to my relationship to Foy and Foy's relationship to me and our relationship to Mel, and none of us live to ourselves because we all have a relationship with one another. That's not what this is talking about. None of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself because we have a relationship with the Lord. None of us lives except to the Lord, and none of us dies except to the Lord. He's our master. For if we live, we live to the Lord. My life is dedicated to serve the Lord. And if we die, hopefully, we die to the Lord. He's the one who really counts. Therefore, whether we live or die, we're the Lord's. And I'm not the servant of another. I'm the servant only of the Lord. Everything that I do in life, I have to do to his glory, with his permission, with his authority. For to this end, Christ died and rose and lived again, that he might be Lord of both the dead and the living. That's why Jesus died, so that we could be his servants and we could live and die in our relationship with him. So then, verse 10, why do you judge? Again, the word judge here is used in the sense of condemn. Why do you condemn your brother? Or why do you show contempt for your brother? That's the problem. This person who was eating meat shows contempt for the brother who, because of his lack of understanding, doesn't eat meat. Or maybe it was the other way around. The guy who doesn't eat meat was condemning his brother who does eat meat. And that's not hard to understand why he would do that. But the question is, you who are condemning your brother, is he your servant? Or whose service is he? Well, no, he's the Lord's servant. So why are you, as a servant of the Lord, equal to this brother in his service to the Lord, why are you condemning him when really the only one he is accountable to is the Lord himself? He's the Lord's servant. Why are you showing contempt for your brother? For we all shall stand before the judgment seat of Christ. 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, verse 10. Every one of us is going to be judged by the Lord. For as it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. Go to Philippians, the 2nd chapter, verses 5 through 11, and you'll see that same picture of the judgment seat, where we're all going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account for the things done in this body, whether good or bad. Romans 2, verses 5 through 11, and Acts, the 17th chapter, verse 31, say the same thing. So then each of us is going to give an account of himself to God. I don't have to give an account for whether or not I have followed your opinions. You don't have to give an account for whether or not you have followed my opinions, because our opinions are never going to be used as the standard for judgment of anybody. The only standard for judgment, the only judge there is Christ, and his gospel is the only standard that will be used to judge anyone. So therefore, let us not judge or condemn one another anymore, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way. Here he begins to address the same kind of problems that Paul addressed to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians, the 8th and the 10th chapters. I don't know whether there is any particular reason for Paul dealing with this subject here in the same way that he dealt with it at Corinth, inasmuch as he was writing this letter while he was at Corinth at the end of his third preaching journey, but there is that similarity. Let us not therefore judge one another, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way. Here's a guy who thinks it's right to a Gentile who believes it's right to eat pork chops. And he invites his Gentile Christian who, and I'm the other way around, here's a Gentile who believes it's right to eat pork. And he invites a Jewish brother who has some conscientious objections to the eating of pork based upon his misunderstanding about the fact that the law of Moses hasn't been done away with. And so he invites his Jewish friend over for dinner and serves him pork chop. What's the Jewish fellow going to do when he gets there and finds this pork chop on his plate? He's going to feel bad, isn't he? Now what do? I don't want to hurt my host feelings, but I don't want to eat this either. And if I eat it, I'm going to violate my conscience, and that's sin. So what am I going to do? Well, I'll just go ahead and eat it anyway, violating my conscience because I don't want to hurt my brother's feelings. When he does that, you have caused him to stumble. You've put him in a position where it is difficult for him not to violate his conscience. And causing him to stumble, violating his conscience, being guilty of sin, he's going to be lost. Now, I don't think of many situations where that would apply to us. Perhaps it might be a situation where we would convert a Seventh-day Adventist who believes it's wrong to eat pork. And you might invite him over, and not being aware of his objection to it, invite him to eat it, and he would do that with a violation of his conscience. You might have a Mormon convert who hasn't really given up the idea that it's wrong to drink coffee, and if you offer him coffee and he drinks it, he's going to violate his conscience. So there are some similarities to situations that we might experience in our lives when this problem could come up, that we would put another person in a position of stumbling or offending by something that we do. John?